And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear here and declare your independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedom's with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. All right, so I won't make any royalties. All right, what we're going to do today is we're going to talk with Matt Smith for a couple hours. He's a good friend that I just like, man, no, I ain't going to do it. Ain't going to do it. Because I know how busy he's been and all the stuff that he's involved in. And I'm like, ooh, let's talk all about it. I'm going to read you a little bit about Matt Smith, and then you'll see why. And you'll go, ooh, I hope he talks to him about this and that. Matt is an experienced entrepreneur, investor, and advisor who has founded and led multiple successful businesses. He currently serves as CEO of Royalty Exchange, the leading online platform for buying and selling royalties. Now, this is very interesting. You know, I've heard the spiel. It's going to be. We just had an intellectual property debate at the Economic Discussion Group Wednesday, and an author got up, and what was obvious was that he did the research to try and counter libertarians like, intellectual property, I'm not, you know, kind of supportive. And all of a sudden, he came up against a pressure wave he didn't know was there. He was like, damn. You know, so, you know, we'll talk about that. But in the current environment, you know, there are royalties on songs. So can you make money on that? Well, Matt's going to. He's going to tell us all about it. He previously founded several companies, including a jobs portal in the late 90s, an ad agency, a marketing analytics business, a real estate listings portal, several niche publishing companies. Along the way, he acquired several ventures, as well as including a domain registrar, an Irish pub, and most recently, Royalty Exchange. Before acquiring Royalty Exchange, Matt served as CEO of Stansberry Research, a financial research firm with $200 million in annual revenue. And doing well over there, wanted to stay. He goes, I got business to do. Well, he's off doing business. And he travels the world. You know, and he hobnobs with the boys. So he's going to explain it, you know, just a perspective on the world market, everything. He's very well informed on everything and what be a coming, too. So we're going to, that's why 2 hours, man, you're going to get it all. In addition to his role at Royalty Exchange, Matt coaches and mentors entrepreneurs both individually as Techstars mentor and as an instructor at an entrepreneurial boot camp held overseas every year. He's also co-founder of the Atlas 400, an exclusive international social club. You know, he actually said that. You know, I was wondering if we're going to talk about Atlas 400. Let's go ahead and do that real quick and get that out of the way. Will you, Matt? And tell us the Atlas 400. What's that all about?
Well, first of all, Ernie, it's good to talk to you as always, and that is the most interesting intro I've ever had. You know, you set the bar pretty high for what I'm going to be.
Yeah,
able to
you
talk
better
about
be
today.
Entertaining, man.
I better be. Well, thankfully, you're entertaining enough for both of us, luckily. But the Atlas 400 is essentially it's a social club. It's based around traveling to interesting places with interesting people and doing interesting things, and it's all essentially the idea. A lot of people who end up in that club are people who, you know, are self-made folks who, you know, have built a reasonable amount of financial success for themselves and, you know, basically kind of feel like they're almost an alien in their world. Like they, you know, there's not really people that they can really talk to about what they really think about things and that they, you know, can, and most of the people that they interact with on a daily basis are people that, you know, work for them. You know, so they don't.
Yeah, they didn't. You know, they don't have peers to hobnob with to sit there and talk about how they're pissed off that they had to pay $30 million in taxes. You know what I mean?
Well, that has been a topic of conversation before, yeah.
They're going, yeah, man, God, man, they really rate me on this tax thing, and they wanted me to supply this and where all my gold is, and they got in the overseas of the fact that it won't let me have a bank account. You know, don't you hate when that happens? Well, if you're talking to your maid, they don't know what you're talking about.
No, they don't.
No, so
that's like club, but it's a lot of fun. You know, I mean, you know, you and I have mutual friends in the club, and I think that, you know, it's certainly expanded the quality of relationships that I have in my life in a dramatic way. It's been great for me personally.
Yeah, these successful people, not only financially, a lot of them just nice people. Certainly, if they're kind of libertarian oriented and they're not wanting to run anybody's life anyway, they find other people like this. And the 400, I think it comes from like 200 couples. So it's a family. It's a you know, partner thing. You got husbands and wives and partners going on trips. Describe some of these trips.
Well, they're pretty extraordinary. I mean, of course, the club's been around now for, I guess it's in its seventh year at this point. So, the trips have certainly, a number of trips and that we do every year has certainly expanded as the club has gotten more, you know, more organized and more professionally run. And when we first started off, it's like any startup. It wasn't run, you know, it was kind of at the seat of our pants for the most part. But you know, now our mutual friends are going on a trip. I'm not going to this one because it's when our charity, this annual charity thing we do is happening, but they're going to Antarctica. And there are apparently only 75 civilians that actually make it to the true South Pole each year. And this year, 15 of those are Atlas members.
Yeah, and going to the South Pole. I bet there and say, you know, the black Santa Claus or whatever, okay?
Right.
They're, you know, we're going down to the South Pole, and they're just, boom. I go, are you guys landing? I think they said, yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah, landing. They're staying there, you know, at the research facilities.
No. At the actual South Pole.
They are going all the way down to the actual point in the South Pole.
And they're going to land.
I know they're landing at the research facilities, and I think that those are very close to it, yeah.
Damn. Oh, you mean it's a south, so it's not like, you know, the bay or something. When they go, there's an actual research facility near the south. Okay, and they're going to stay overnight?
Yeah, oh, they're going to be there for a few days.
I mean, oh,
the
thing is
that, like I said, there's only 75 civilians a year, but there's all kinds of researchers that are there for these handful of months a year that they actually can.
All right, there. Matt, is it you that comes up with these ideas? I mean, how crazy? You do a Galapagos thing, you know, Amazon this, safari with your cameras out in Africa and petting, you know, giraffes and lions and stuff. I mean, you know, who comes up with this stuff?
You know, in the very beginning, I contributed a little bit to some of the ideas, but now, you know, we have a team of people who focus on this full time, and so they come up with really extraordinary things.
Damn. I mean, if you got, you know, more money than you know what to do with, and you're not happy or not having fun, all the money doesn't do you any good. Well, guess what? There are other people the same way. They're quality people. And ones that are more freedom-oriented, the libertarian mindset, probably feel more alone than others, especially with money. And you're the 1% of the evil. You go, hey, I didn't have, you know, all this government monopoly protection or whatever. I did it my freaking self. It's mine. And I don't have a problem, you know, using it for my enjoyment or whatever the heck I want to do in support of freedom of something, and I got friends. Well, that's what Atlas 400 is. And if you're lucky enough to be invited, you know, I'm not rich enough. They're nice enough, whatever. But, you know,
I know
a lot of the guys, you know, and they're just, and I really am glad that they have each other to go share this stuff with. And I love seeing the pictures. Like, was the South Pacific one following the eclipse? Was that you guys?
No, that was something that that was done separately as an add-on to a New Zealand trip.
Yeah, this is just creative and fun stuff. There's so many. I'm going, ooh, that would be good. Do you got some other cool ones planned?
I know that there's a Mount Kilimanjaro one in the summer of next year, and there's a Chile trip coming up in the spring. But there's always three or four really exciting ones every year. Those are the two that I know of that are already on the calendar.
Very cool, very cool.
Now, of course, every member doesn't go on every trip. You know, I mean, you can't realistically, when people still have lives and have to work. But you know, the goal is members try to go. We have an annual meeting, which almost everybody comes to, and then we have a. They do one great trip a year.
You know, this is when you put freedom, like you know, Matt and friends have done, you put freedom-oriented people with some money together and just let them be friends. They'll come up with cool stuff to do, but, you know, is it like Is it a Bilderberger? Or they want to control the administration of we getting the elected office of Burek? Not so much.
Not at all. Not
from
at all.
Second letter of Captain Mark. Any pirate knows that commerce is communication. Markets condense oceans of information into a single price. Innovations in communication are circumventing the scrutiny of the crown. This signals a change in the coin of the realm. The crown uses digital currency to surveil, censor, seize, and destroy wealth at will. So pirate currency must protect us from this weaponized money. We need to move funds further, faster, cheaper, and without third-party observation, basing decisions on an accelerating flow of information. So pirates require nearly instantaneous transactions with no arbitrary limits on volume or artificial influences on fees. Most importantly, a pirate currency must preclude centralization. Otherwise, it will become another link in our chain to the crown. A superior currency will result in the obsolescence of the coin of the realm and the extinction of the crown itself. Trade above the grid. Join us at piratswithoutborders.com. And the extinction of the crown itself. I'm like, man, that's my goal, right? At least in my head. Okay, when we come back, we can get the royalty exchange whenever you want. But I did, that's why I knew we were going to need a couple hours because, man, it's Matt Smith and, like, you don't got enough stuff to talk about. So we can do the knowledge that you have from Stansberry and what you think the economy is going to do. But I definitely want to get into... you're traveling around the world, and from a perspective of what the world has of America, your perspective of America, and the future economic of whatever, and prepare for and get ready, and the future is going to be in abundance, might, and kind of you see that all the interesting stuff. You know what I mean?
Yep.
All right. So, what do you want to come back with?
Whatever you want. Royalty exchange is not, I don't know how appropriate that is for this audience, so we don't have to talk about that much at all. So,
well, I want to get, you know, that it exists and how you've maneuvered this into, you know, I think it's interesting, you know.
Okay.
You know, it's got $200 million in annual revenue. I'm like...
Well, that's Stansberry. That's Stansberry.
Oh, okay. But, I'm sorry. I saw this royalty exchange. Well, you just started it, but yeah, I know I was like $200 million. I'm like, holy crap, man.
Yeah.
I'm in the wrong business. All right. So let's go ahead and... we'll get to it in the next hour. Yeah, we'll get to it in the next hour. This hour, let's go ahead and, you know, get your bona fides and back, and then there'll be a little bit more why you did that or how you're doing it and what you hope to accomplish with it. And then, when we come back, let's do your years at, before Porter Stansberry. Why don't we start, where did your financial stuff start? It was during the crash or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I was following all the newsletters of, like, but Doug Casey in particular, and then Doug introduced me to James, Simon Black, and we started Sovereign Man, that publication, together.
Yeah.
And that's where I started to really get more interested in finance.
Let's do that. Let's go back to the beginning, where you even came from, you know, that. Hell, you're not that old. I mean, you know, you had to be, what, in your early 30s or, you know, late 20s when you first started this?
When I first started in finance stuff, now it was probably early 30s. But, you know, I mean, as an entrepreneur, I was 19, I guess, when I first.
Okay. When we come back, I got to name that tune, man. You got to tell me where this came from. Nobody ever gets it.
I'll do my best.
All right. We'll be back in 30 seconds.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Okay, it's Name That Tune. Matt, gonna get it?
I have no clue. Sorry.
Johnny Quest!
No. Slightly before my time. It was still airing occasionally on USA Network. But
if
rarely.
You heard it once, you should know. Yeah, no, I just like nobody ever get, you know, I don't think anybody. No, I think Greenspan did. He got it. You know,
just, really?
A friend of mine. You know, but about the same age, and yeah, whatever. But so let's go ahead and go back to your history, where all this information and your contacts and, oh, my God, you know, there is – a lot of people don't understand. You would think that there's – where's all the freedom guys? Well, if they just got together and the Bitcoin people, the new nouveau riche, I'm crypto rich and I got – and kind of now what? How come they're not – well, how do you know they're not? It's just not – what do you think they should do? Go elect a congressman or something? You know, go vote? Run a campaign? They're like, no, it's just opinion. It's just everybody. You know what? We just said in the first hour we had anti-war and the Libertarian Institute on, and they focusing on challenging the war in Yemen by challenging the war powers. They get 48 hours to go in and before they got to notify Congress, and they get 60 days to stay and 30 days to come. I got a 90-day war with all the forces and everything without even having to commit us and not even having to go to Congress to what? And that we're not attacking a war powers act of them enabled to go kick ass. I'm like, what the hell, man? Yemen, I mean, fine, go stop Yemen, but they got 15 gazillion others right behind them. And Matt knows this. He's been all over the world. Well, he started, by following the newsletters of wealthy individuals and people that are doing well, like Doug Casey, and they eventually saw something in young Matt, and they said, ooh, you smart. We want to help you. Well, tell me about those days. Where did you come from, and why did they want to help you?
Well, let me say first, I'm from Iowa, which is a great place to be from, but not necessarily the best place to be. And I built some successful businesses there, and I got to a point when I was about 30 years old where I was, and this doesn't say a lot, but I was the wealthiest, most successful person I'd ever known. It doesn't say a lot because I didn't have a big horizons. But I'd left Iowa and I'd lived in different states before, but I'd never really done a lot outside of there. And, I definitely felt like an alien. There was no one I could talk to about the way that I saw the world, and I had no real peers. And it was, the only kind of lifeline I really had was I was learning to think properly from people like Doug Casey. I mean, Doug, who was a significant influence on my life long before I met him. And, right before the financial crisis, I had some money then, and I was trying to think of what I could do with it. What do I do with it to make sure that when this whole thing blows up, that it doesn't all...
Give us a hint of what, where you got most of your money. Was it real estate? Was it selling widgets? You invented the better toothbrush? I mean, what?
Well, as mostly internet-related things. So I had the biggest thing was I had an ad agency, which I sold in 2005.
Okay, so all of a sudden you created something, you sold it, now I got a bunch of money, I'd like to keep it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I was interested in keeping everything that I made, of course, but you realize you can't do that. So, but I definitely wanted to, I seemed like the next logical step was to try and be a good steward of capital now that I'd had a little nest egg. So, but I was mostly interested in Doug and people like Doug because of the ideas. Because what I really realized is I didn't have models for thinking properly about myself, the world, and my relation to it. So Doug is still shocking sometimes when he talks. He says things that are totally, politically incorrect, and it's wonderful because it just like challenges your thinking. So I was a big fan of Doug's, never met him. But he was saying in advance of the financial crisis, hey, Argentina's a place where I'm going to be watching it on my big screen television rather than out my living room window. And so I went down for right after my daughter was born. She was like 6 weeks old. And I said, I'm going to go down to Argentina for a week and I'm going to see if I can find an apartment for us. And so I went down there. And as I'm looking for apartments, one of the evenings, actually, I walk out of my hotel. Doug walks in front of me on the sidewalk. He just happened to be in this exact same place at the exact same moment. I'd never met him before. Yeah, total serendipitous thing. It was wonderful. And I made a buffoon of myself, frankly, because I was so excited to see him. I've never been not a huge fanboy, typically, but boy, I was then. I was so happy. I was so weird to see him there. In any case, we ended up moving down to Argentina, and over the course of the next 6 months or so, I got to know Doug a little bit, and it grew dramatically over time. And I got to know a lot of other, people in Doug's circle. And ultimately, Doug introduced me to Simon Black, who was then writing a newsletter for Casey Research. At the time, then I was kind of on a sabbatical. I wasn't really doing anything then, and I was kind of sort of on a sabbatical. And so then Simon and I started Sovereign Man, which is a publication on, you know, basically hedging your bets with, you know, trying to minimize sovereign risk and that sort of thing. Mostly just trying to find ways to live free, though. And so we started that together, and during that, especially the first year of that, we both traveled a lot with Doug. And we did some, one of Doug's favorite, he calls it his hobby, is to try and work with countries that he feels like are really backwards and really messed up, but that there's a chance that they could actually adopt policies that would encourage freedom and cause all kinds of economic enrichment for all the citizens. So he's been doing this for decades, going to these countries and doing these things, and we got to participate in it, and it was wonderful. I mean, totally new experience for me when we're sitting, you know, with the president of Palau consulting him on, you know, how he should alter the economic policies of the country. Most people don't even know what Palau is, but it's a beautiful little country in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, part of the coalition.
Exactly, it is. Yeah, it's the backup. It's the U.S. backup to Guam. So interestingly enough, they have a weird relationship with the U.S., which is, you know, mostly bad for them. But I think that, you know, from a U.S. regulatory framework, especially taxing framework, that Palau has a special deal essentially compared to other nations. So, which offers certain benefits for U.S. citizens. So there's a lot of opportunity to do some cool stuff there. But Doug just expanded my horizons, helped me think properly about what my role was.
Well, freaking share world. The secret with the audience, man. Don't be teasing us like that. You know, well, thinking rat. What do you mean?
Well, it's definitely thinking rationally. It's understanding your higher self and your lower self is a big part of it. And understanding that, you know, that fear is what drives a lot of the desire to control people and things around you, and how just evil that is. How utterly wrong it is. I mean, you know, Doug is certainly a volunteerist, at least. You know, he's certainly not interested in coercing anybody to do anything, and I think that that's that was a breakthrough for me actually, because it might sound silly, because it seemed obvious that that's the right way to behave, at least to you, you know, but when I was 35, I can't say that was super clear to me, but it is now, obviously.
Yeah, no, I just saw Doug up at the Aspen Institute for the Nexus Earth Conference, and he was really there in support of Ross Ulbricht. You know, he had dedicated one of the books or something to him, and he was there to help fundraise for that. He's all over. Very cool, very cool, very cool. Okay, we'll pick it up there and just keep going from there. This is good. This is good, this is good, this is good. This is what I wanted to hear. Because these, you know, your story is inspirational to a lot of people like you. Because this is the common denominator that I'm finding that people such as yourself. If successful because of you have some acumen and whatever, but you can't be happy if you're alone and you got a lot of pressures from every government agency wants everything you got, and oh, where's the money? And then everybody else, you know, you're being punished because you're making money. And then so you start to surround yourself with people that understand your plight, but they're all intelligent. This is the one thing that is different. You don't, and the crowd, certainly if they're libertarian oriented and successful, it just seems to me that it's like a minimum job requirement of a 150 IQ or something.
Yeah, but I'm not quite there, but
but you know,
but being around,
I mean,
people like Peter certainly skew the average up, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, you know, this is, I mean, it seems like a common, they're thinking, I'm so honored that I can hang out with these guys and they don't see that I'm, or at least make me feel I'm disabled. You know what I mean?
You're definitely not.
So I'm going, hey man, slow down. What would you just say? And they're patient with me. Sometimes, you know, you guys, they're just like, you know, oh God, Ernie, man, get up to speed. That was fifth grade math. I mean, come on. You know, that's another thing we've been doing a lot on. Well, you can hear on the second letter of Captain Mark is all the, you know, the crypto stuff. I'm going to the Texas Bitcoin Conference. I just came from Aspen and, you know, speak there and so on. And my whole thing is it's philosophy. This is the part that, you know, the happiness that has allured a lot of successful people is that they have no one around them that agrees with them, that they're right, a proper role of their role in the world. And they're not, how can I go through this and not be a moving duck in a shooting gallery all the time. I didn't bother anybody. What the hell, man? I did it legit. You know, why am I being attacked so much? So you got to defend yourself. So people come in, there's different creative ways. And a lot of it you find, you know, it's the Clinton Foundation and friends and Podesta and all these guys, you know, get a they have some way to avoid all this kind of, but you're not allowed, or are we? Or, well, they start sharing with each other and you find out how the system really works internationally. And as we get through your history of get up to speed when you first met Doug, when we come back, eventually I want to get into business opportunities and circumstances worldwide, because there is a gentleman, Nomad Capitalist, a young guy that he'd come on, and we spoke at a Peter Schiff and I and Goyette, and I think you might have been there, wouldn't it? You know, at the in Las Vegas, the Nomad Capitalist event, weren't you?
No, I didn't go to that one, no.
You know, well, the thing is that he made a statement that I thought was really interesting. There's a young guy, he's going around, he's like 6'4 or something, and lily white and Scandinavian or whatever, and he goes, "You go where you're treated the best." That's the rule. You go where you're treated the best. You know, I'm sure Doug kind of thinking that way too. And I go, "All right, where's that?" He goes, "Cambodia." And I'm going, "Cambodia? Boy, on the beach, I bet you stick out, man. You're a sore thumb out in the middle of it." And they still go, "Yep, I like it." All right, well, I hear that from a lot of people. And you, last couple of years, been to Cambodia too, haven't you?
No, I haven't. Actually, I've never been to Cambodia.
Really?
I've never been to Cambodia, yeah.
God, no. Man, everybody, every time I turn around, somebody's telling me how great Cambodia is.
But I think it's this nomad crowd that's young people who don't really earn much money, who are basically who still are seeking freedom and, you know, to live at a higher standard. And so places like Cambodia and, you know, was Thailand.
Back. Let's do it.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
And right when it was getting good, did I pay the royalties, the royalty exchange? We'll talk about it. But don't you just hate when they just turn it down? It's really getting good. Yeah. China Grove. Dubé Brothers. I just like saying it. Dubé Brothers. All right. Well, we'll get into that in a little bit in the next hour, you know, this royalty thing and how it works and intellectual property and so on. This is going to become a thing. We're having Donna put out the request for Stephen Kinsella to come back on the show and debate, you know, someone on copyright. He just wanted to focus on copyright. He kind of got convinced maybe this invention patent stuff might not be the way to go. But, you know, copyright, you know, it's up in the air. We're going to talk to Matt about that. But we want to finish his conversion. You know, and the people that he's met with and so on, we've learned a lot already. Matt, all of a sudden, there's Doug Casey standing in front of him. They go around meeting with the peoples and so on, become friends. And what first economic lesson did you get from the association with him and the other guys? Was it what? You know, share with us what you think you learned that we should know.
Well, I mean, I think that the biggest financial lesson or economic lesson is one of the basic principles Doug talks about all the time, which is the greatest risk to somebody's wealth and livelihood is the state. And I'm sure you can understand that. But I think that in, you know, most of the, certainly the evils that are wrought on a people are from their own government, but also the risk to capital to, you know, he's an investor, so he looks at it from that perspective. So the risk to your capital is within, if all of your capital is trapped within one state, essentially, then you are at, you're exposing yourself in a way that you're probably not appropriately accounting for. So he, just thinking about that and thinking about how you hedge that risk, just like you'd hedge any other risk, you know, you can hedge any risk, like a company having a bad quarter by, you know, in a number of ways, actually. But sovereign risk is one that we often ignore because it's behind the scenes. And when it does occur, it's, you know, they're big and they seem like they're like one-time events, and they're not. So trying to avoid the sovereign risks is the biggest probably lesson I got from Doug early on.
So the first thing is what? Put your money under the mattress or something? I mean, what are you saying? What are some of the techniques?
Well, it all depends upon every, you know, I'm certainly not a financial advisor, so take that first. But and it all depends on somebody's particular circumstance. I mean, if you only have $10,000, it isn't it isn't a smart idea for you to go and try and open a foreign bank account somewhere, because there's all kinds of reporting requirements that go along with it. It's a real pain in the ass, and it's not a, you know, that it's not a reasonable hedge for $10,000. But, you know, it's as your wealth grows, then those things become a much bigger concern. I mean, a much more appropriate way now, which this wasn't there when I met Doug, would be to buy some, you know, buy some crypto if you want to, you know, get some hedge against the inflation or against other state actors. So that's a much easier way to do it today, and never didn't exist then.
Well, I didn't get the impression, certainly early on. I mean, we were talking about it. You know, they, you know, a lot of the guys read Freedom's Phoenix and so on, but, you know, they knew about it. It wasn't a secret. And, you know, we put, you know, our spin on why it's, you know, decentralized, they can't do it, borderless, kiss my butt money. But I didn't get the impression a lot of the Atlas guys jumped into crypto real fast.
I know. I was really surprised by that, because we were at this awesome fishing lodge in Upper BC recently, a few months ago. And I was the only one there who owned crypto. I was really shocked by that, actually. I was extolling the virtues the entire time. But I don't know. I don't know what it is. I don't know why they were pretty late to it. And, you know, even people like Doug was late to it. He didn't see the benefits of it right away, and he certainly is on, you know, as a believer at this point, understands it completely. But it was a
philosophical thing for us. I mean, that's why they came to the Freedom community early on, 9, 10. They're like, oh, this is great, and Freedom Money. And we're like, all right, you know, convince me. And I'm like, ooh, okay, you know, I can see the benefits of this. But the it just seems that they don't trust it. A lot of them are very smart mathematically. They go, look, I see where this goes. You're going to need a Dyson sphere to power it. I mean, you know, it's this is where there's a lot of fundamental things they got questions about. But the crypto is what in your life? I mean, you're going, yeah, this is we've been doing a lot about it here, and I'm looking for my pirate money. I need pirate money. You know, all the promises that they made early on about anonymity and speed of transactions and the low transaction cost and uncensorable, and they can't stop it. And we put all these fees and said, look, this is what we want. You promised all this stuff, got us all excited and everything, you know, and this is what we need. Well, what's your view on it? Are you waiting for a new one, or is it just a store of value? Do you need it as a currency? What's your view on crypto?
Well, the first time I bought Bitcoin was in early 2011, and I lost it. But I was trying to understand how it worked, basically, because it was still it was confusing, and it was difficult to buy, and it was certainly, difficult to store, and that's why I lost it along the way.
Yeah.
I think that I know lots of people this happened to. But I bought it then just to try and understand it, because this is what we, you know, with the Sovereign Man publication, where we focus on financial issues, we focus on privacy issues, and so it made sense to try and understand it. So that was my first foray into it. After I got to know, I bought a little bit more in 2015, which was a small amount, and then I started buying a lot more heavily in January and February of 2016. What I love about it is like a frontier territory. It reminds me of in the late 90s and early 2000s, the internet in general, when you're trying to do things innovatively on the internet, there weren't a lot of rules. There was a lot of, there were bad actors there. There were good actors there, but there was an incredible amount of innovation that took place. And it was very difficult at any moment in time to understand the way it was going to actually all flush out. But it was a frontier, and I think that, you know, I tell some of my internet business friends, I say, you know, how much harder they have it today than in the early 2000s. Like, if you couldn't make $1 million a year, I thought, on the internet in 2003, two or one, you didn't know what you were doing. Like, you weren't very smart, or you weren't trying, because it was pretty easy. And that's just because you're on the cutting edge of the frontier. So if you're smart and agile and whatever, there's a lot of opportunity there. And I really think that the crypto thing is that today, but in a way that's so much larger and than what the internet e-commerce trend and so forth was itself. I mean, I think this is so fundamental change things for people, and I think is certainly a huge wealth creation opportunity if you participate properly. And how do you participate properly? We won't really know until 5 years from now what that meant. But for me personally, I don't know, you know, I know all the promises of crypto, you know, what we're supposed to be there and what is there and what isn't there. And, you know, I just own a few of the different cryptocurrencies, and I'm not, like, I'm not a participant in the ICOs. I'm not, like, I feel like there's a lot of new participants coming into that kind of for speculation.
Oh, I got Tone Vase in the other room. He's staying here. He's, you know, this week, and we've been doing shows, and he's a big advocate of Bitcoin and everything else. It's scam coin. I mean, he has his own logo, scam coin. You know what I mean? It's kind of,
yeah.
If it's not Bitcoin, scam. I go, why? It's kind of a scam because it's not Bitcoin scam. You know, so this is a lot of people, they you know, make blanket statements like that, but he's on it because he sees all of these as just a distraction from, well, Bitcoin's going to fork again and then again and again. You know, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on. He was doing a podcast last night. They were talking about it. And I'm just wondering where the stability is. Well, for me, it's the philosophy. It has its intrinsic value. Peter Schiff and I go at this all the time. And he's like, yeah, well, what's its intrinsic value? I go, how much gold and silver I'm willing to give up for its features? I mean, you know, it has features. I mean, it has stuff. That's a value. I can move stuff around. They can't stop it, and they can suck it. That's the value. So this is not going to go away. Russia is now going to have its own cryptocurrency. But I tell you, any state that's doing a cryptocurrency, it's just another link in the chain to the crown. I guarantee it. It's going to be surveillance of, oh, my God. It's, you know, Big Bubba money. I guarantee it. Well, somebody's got to look at it and go, look, I need it to do this, 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 and this. Well, Matt Smith and friends are definitely those guys. They're not wanting to give up a bunch more information to the man. Crimes of the Crown by Captain Mark. The crown casts the world in shadow and claims to be our guiding light. Cowards clamor for security from boogeymen and ghost stories. While I say these hobgoblins are imaginary. I say those they propped up as our liberators are now subsisting on our bondage. I say there is freedom in the black, and that's exactly where we intend to go. The crown banishes its own officers for exposing its crimes and tortures dissidents to the brink of madness. It dominates the globe and swallows the wealth of generations, leaving only blood and excrement. The crown calls it piracy to explore frontiers beyond its grasp. So the time has come for us to define the conduct among pirates. I say the crown has trampled our necks long enough. Need decentralized solutions to centralized problems? Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels? Or just want some swag to let the crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at piratewithoutborders.com. We won't be hard to find. I'm telling you, it's an attitude, it's an opinion, and this is what we're going to be hammering when we go to Texas, too. And, you know, we're having fun with this, and this is where I'm expanding of whatever. The thing is, though, is I know, Matt, you give me all the criticism that go, Ernie, man, you got a big database, an opportunity, you're kidding, how come you're not making money? Well, you're embarrassing you're so poor, you know?
And that's,
No, TMC is... It's like, you're killing me, man.
Well, success on the internet is a lot harder today than it was in the early 2000s. That was one of my big points, and I think that's what the crypto now, where there's such huge opportunity because we're on the frontiers. There's lots of good actors, lots of bad actors, lots of innovation, and at the end of the day, you really don't know the way it's going to turn out, but I think that the outcome will be positive. I mean, it is actually a free market. You know, and there's trying to be restrained, of course, and, you know, but it's one of the few places where you can find a real free market today, and there's a lot of innovation around it.
You know, that's one thing. A lot of times there's always some brick and mortar. See, that's one of the good points that they make about Bitcoin. You don't know who Satoshi is. There's no one person to go get. I guess you'd go after core dev or something, but, you know, core development. But you have all these Bitcoin nodes and miners and stuff and all over the world. It's out. There's nothing to kill. I mean, there's nowhere for them to go. That's the whole point, an example of decentralization. When you start these new coins, well, we know that it's got 1 to 3 developers. It runs a server over here. It does it. They're more vulnerable, and a lot of them are hopefully, you know, trying to, you know, alleviate that. But I'm is going to rest and work if you need. Okay, yeah, Tone is out there. Yeah, if he wants to, you know, just come in and hang out working here, I don't care. We make fun of him. This is where I think the innovation is going to be because they can't stop it. You know, that's the whole point. And these people that want to shoehorn crypto into the legacy system, is just begging for trouble. I don't want to fix them. You know, I just want to ignore them and replace them. So I, you know, now there was we did a show recently. I want to talk about this on air. Guys came on yesterday, day before, about Zencash, and they're all pumped up about whatever. And they had a little something in there that I found very interesting that they didn't lead off with. And I'm like, I'm going to backhand you guys. You need to lead off with this stuff, you know? So I'm going to explain it to them. You come back and see if you think you dig it, too. All right, we'll be back in a few seconds.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Started doing radio, they said, how come I gotta declare my independence with you? Good point. You can do it all by yourself. This is how you do it. This is how you do it. Here, I'd like to hear it. Here you go. I wrote a song about it. Here you go. I declare my independence. See how easy it was? No government for! Yeah, we're having some fun. All right. Matt Smith, you know, he's an entrepreneur, man. He demand. You know, made some money in Iowa. He's like, you know, I got, you know, get out of Iowa because it's Iowa. So I'm going to go, and he happened to just to meet Doug Casey. You know, at the hotel, he goes down, you know, South America, and he says, you know, let's see what's up. And there he is, and they become, because I can see Matt Smith is, you know, quick friends. Tall, good-looking, athletic, intelligent, articulate, creative. You know, yep. Yeah, we need you. Yeah, that's one thing. Stansberry, you know, Porter Stansberry Group, you're CEO for what, 5 years or so? Tell me about that.
3.5 years, and actually that's Doug introduced me to Porter after, I think, maybe a couple years. Doug and I, you know, were friends, and Doug introduced me to Porter, and Porter and I became friends, and then as Porter's business was continuing to expand, and it was just, you know, at some point everybody gets a little burned out, and he was just at that stage, and he told me later that he was trying to recruit me for a couple of years, and I'm like, well, you never really told me, and so, you know, I had no idea, but, you know, offered me that job. It's really the first real job I'd ever had. You know, I'd only done things on my own really before that, and you know, it was a wonderful experience. I got to work with people who were fantastically more financially sophisticated than I was, and you know, it was a great learning experience for me on the finance side of things, and I got to really I got to do some things with a larger business that I, you know, I'd never built a business that did $200 million in revenues, and you know, but to being able to grow that business and work with a great team, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, but I guarantee they want some more of them, Matt Smith, and you're like, man, not so much. Why? What?
Well, I mean, well, there's a couple of reasons. You know, so we had our original deal was 3.5 years, and I honestly, it's hard for me to work for other people.
It was a 3.5 year prison sentence with a lot of money.
No, it wasn't. There was a lot. I was paid incredibly well, and one of the things that actually it did start to feel like, though, is I felt like that I might be getting you know, risk averse from an entrepreneurial perspective,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, I hadn't had a paycheck before, not something that just showed up every month. You know, that was weird. You know, as an entrepreneur, it's feast or famine. And, you know, you just try and have more feast than famine and you can do really well. And, but the appetite for that as you get older and, you know, and if you get used, you can very easily get used to, sort of, you know, golden chains, I guess. And, you know, and it's not really who I am. I like being an entrepreneur. I like working on the ideas that I think are interesting. And, while I certainly loved serving the customers that we served at Stansberry and really trying to, and the team that I got to work with every day, it wasn't really working on the problems that I really was more interested in solving.
You know, here's a problem that we're working on right now. A good friend of mine is a young activist here that, He started his first day on Wall Street when Lieberman went down. And he's like, well, that sucks, you know. So he eventually opened his own firm. He's in his early 30s. He's one of you guys, just one of those really intelligent, go-kick-ass kind of guys. And he's a financial advisor in Scottsdale, Arizona. So he's all libertarianed up, and he comes around, and we do some shows. And matter of fact, we went a bunch of us, you know, went to the movies yesterday. Well, you know, I'm going, all right, I tell you, we got a problem. This is the problem. Guy comes in, he's a listener down in southern Arizona, and he inherited a bunch of, he's older, his mother dies, leaves him a bunch of money, he paid cash for, got the house, he wanted to be totally off the grid, I'm not getting my social security number to get electricity, they can suck it, how many batteries and solar panels do I need? $60,000 worth, and I can run my HVAC, not a problem, install it, boom, done, okay? So, now he's got a bunch of money, and he goes, what do I don't want to bank accounts and so, I put it in crypto. So he puts it in crypto back when Bitcoin was under 1,000. Then it went, you know, stupid, and he's going, yay, now what do I do? All right. So he comes to me, and he says, I don't have any children. I want to be able to make sure my philosophy is continued. You know, I'm sure he meant other than just giving it to me, you know, or something. But I mean, you know, what should I do with it? And I'm going, you know, I don't know. Let's think about it. Well, you don't want to fill out paperwork and the trust this and everything, so we're still working on stuff. But it sparked an idea. We were having a party here, pool party, and Tim Pachote, Libertarian Advisor, he went up to Nexus with us. He was, I'm going to take some stuff down to Texas Bitcoin Conference next week, and that's because here's what he offers. He goes, there is a way. All these rich guys are doing it and Clinton Foundation of kind of stuff. But there is a way. You take your wealth, you put it into a certain kind of trust, you take a bleed on it, you get all kinds of tax credits, and you don't have to pay capital gains. Because this is the problem on crypto. What did you pay for it? How the hell do they know? You know? So the IRS is going to go, yeah, that $5,000 Bitcoin right there, we say you bought it at zero, you owe us the capital gains on $5,000 and fork it over. And I'm going, well, how the hell are you going to get it into the system? You want to buy your Lamborghini or whatever. So now all these crypto rich guys, what do? He is setting up right now and doing all go through compliance, and he has multi-sig contracts with this company and doing, he'd be the second guy on the planet even, you know, attempting this. Where all the, you know, crypto rich, some Matt Smiths out there got some when they needed to in sufficient quantity of, oh my God, you put it into a trust, you take the bleed, and you can do all kinds of stuff tax-free like the big bad boys do. Now, I know Matt probably understands and does this stuff more than others, but you would think there'd be kind of a market for that right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's it is a really interesting idea. Foundations around, it has to be a foundation or a non-profit of some kind, not right. A trust necessarily.
Well, I don't remember what he called it. You know, it's whatever. But yeah, that's all of that geek stuff for you guys. But this is, as he's developing, he gets through compliance and, you know, they do, and he has to give up his Series 7 something financial whatever because they won't let him do it. He goes, I don't like it anyway. Screw it. You know, we'll go do this. Because he sees this. He's a young guy. He's one of you. He sees the future of him. Let's go kick ass. Because all of this money in crypto, guys that you do know that do this, have what? Shitload of freaking crypto, and how the hell do I use it?
Yeah. No, that's one of the big, that's definitely one of the big things now. And I think because of that, of course, There's the great thing about that is that it causes lots of innovation in the crypto space because people want to, they don't really, a lot of times people are not familiar or comfortable with investments outside of it anyway. Even if they didn't mind taking the capital gain and taking it out, they don't really even, there aren't many other investments that make sense today.
Honestly. Yeah, not good with crypto. They're going, hey, somebody show me a better trend than the crypto and well, I'll get right on it, you know. But I do might want to be able to, you know, buy some goodies or prepare some land or do, you know, that's one thing that I want to talk to you about in your experience, you know, we'll get into the next hour, but is there a country or some region of the world that's got your interest or you just try and be mobile and stay on an airplane?
Well, you know, for during the time that I was running Stansberry and in running the startup that I, you know, have now, I visit 7 to 8 countries a year now. It's not nearly what it was before that. Before that, I was, I think my biggest year, it was 30 countries in a year. So it certainly has, you know, it's receded a bit. But, yeah, I think it is important to travel internationally. It's one of Doug's other key tenets is that you learn a lot more about the world if you get out in it and outside of your first of all, you just open your eyes in a different way, but also you get to understand the way that other people are viewing their circumstances, the way they view you, the way they view their opportunities. And I think that they're, you know, as far as pure opportunities go, I mean, one of the things, it's, you know, where you want to be internationally, in my opinion, totally depends on what you want out of it. Because there are, like, what I love Hong Kong as a city. It's probably my favorite city in the world. But, you know, if you don't, if you want to be in a big city that's got lots of interesting things happening in this, like, mix of different cultures, it's really cool. But if you want to basically be in a place where you have, where it's, you can be more safe and secure, you know, some place like Chile is a lot more interesting, or Argentina.
I
depends on what you're looking for.
I'm looking for leave me aloneism. I mean, you know, because a lot of times they'll say, well, the laws, and I don't even care about the law. I'm looking for the culture. You know, what do the people support? Are they going to rat you out? You know, it doesn't matter if there's a law or not. Hell, they'll rat you out to the local cartel of whatever the hell, you know? Is there a cultural shift on the planet or a different way of thinking? Is it going a certain way? Is Soros going to be successful and all rich people except me should be fleeced? I mean, you know, I'm just, you know, what is the mood out there? Well, we're going to find out more when we come back. And I got some surprises for you, too. I'll talk to Matt about it. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Okay, we'll go. We got 8 minutes, and we can just take a break here, and we'll come back and bathroom, whatever. But the one thing I want to make sure I got written down here is we've been hammering on. I'm like, I need a private messaging system. I need some way that we could. Well, it always is able to get traced back. Do you got to have a device to device that brought? And how do you know? And who? Because Signal, they go on about, oh, Signal's all great and wonderful and totally encrypted and it's really good and pinky swear and peace. And I'm going, yeah. They keep saying that. And didn't Facebook buy them? Oh, that was WhatsApp. No. Whatever. Yeah. So then I'm going, you know, Signal, yeah, whatever. But when I did it live, I had Brian Sovereign, Sovereign Tech on. He's like, Ernie, you got to get on. All right, fine. So I get on. Well, our friend, you know, he downloaded Signal because we had a story up on it, and I'm going, whoa, I'm not endorsing it, okay? Because when I did it, the first thing, immediately, all of a sudden I start getting all these texts from everybody, welcome to Signal, welcome to Signal, wait, how the hell did they even know that? It goes into my contacts, and it transmit, everybody knows who I communicated with. And I go, shit, that's 85% of what I don't want them to know. You know, I'm going, no, yeah, you may be a private message. Gee, I wonder what Ernie and Matt are talking about. You know, some freedom-oriented, less power to the man thing. I guarantee that, okay? So I want to have even who I talk to be not available. I don't need that metadata. Hell, that's all a lot of times they want anyway. So I'm going, nope. And when you guys fix this, and I think there might be something to come in that I'm going to tell you about on air, and that awesome. We might be able to do it. And I'm going, yes, how come they haven't thought of that? Well, I'll give you that when we come back. That's something to look forward to. All right, let's take a break, and we'll be back in a little bit.
Cool.
All right.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live, after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
From Keene in the Shire, the Liberty Media capital of the world, this is Darrell W. Perry, host of FPP Radio News for Friday, October 20th, 2017. Silver is trading at $17.17 per ounce. Gold is valued at $1,284 per ounce. Bitcoin is trading at 2.6 cents, and the average price of Bitcoin is $5,670. Antiwar.com reports Catalonia ignored the most recent ultimatum from Spain on disavowing their independence referendum on Thursday, and Spanish officials have announced that they will begin the process of seizing direct control over the region and revoking all of its historical autonomy on Saturday. This move was announced by Spanish officials despite repeated warnings from Catalan President Carles Puigdemont that any attempt to remove their autonomy would lead to Catalonia declaring full independence from Spain. Catalonia held a referendum on October 1st, in which an overwhelming majority supported independence. Spain insisted the referendum did not count, and Spanish police injured over 800 voters in a violent crackdown, which has also increased support for the Declaration of Independence. Puigdemont signed an independence declaration last week, but suspended its implementation pending talks with Spain. Spanish officials, however, have ruled out talks and are threatening to jail a number of additional Catalan leaders for sedition. The rest of the EU is largely supporting Spain in the measure, future, many fearing a successful Catalan secession would bolster such moves around the continent. One EU diplomat also said many have not much to gain from backing Barcelona and a lot to lose from angering Madrid. For over 40 years, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has been a trusted source for buying and selling precious metals. Gold, silver, platinum, and palladium. They don't feed the banks. They're Bitcoin preferred and have removed the minimum purchase amount for all orders paid in the digital currency. Call Roberts & Roberts Brokerage today for knowledgeable advice on buying and selling precious metals and a forward-thinking approach to new technologies. 800-874-9760 or visit online at rrbi.co. UPI reports the Missouri Court of Appeals threw out a judgment against Johnson & Johnson that would have sent $72 million to a woman's family who claims she died of ovarian cancer from contact with the company's talcum baby powder. The Missouri Eastern District Court of Appeals on Tuesday ruled the state was not the proper jurisdiction because the 62-year-old woman was from Birmingham, Alabama. The judges cited a U.S. Supreme Court decision in June that ruled the plaintiff's claims must have a connection to the state where the lawsuit is filed. In February 2016, a circuit court jury in St. Louis ordered the company to pay the family $10 million in actual damages and $62 million in punitive damages. Jacqueline Fox died 4 months before the trial. Fox believed she had been using Johnson & Johnson talc-based products for more than 25 years. She was among 65 plaintiffs, including only two from Missouri who joined the lawsuit. In three other St. Louis jury verdicts, more than $200 million total was awarded against the New Jersey-based healthcare giant. Plaintiffs were from California, South Dakota, Tennessee, and Virginia, and all but one prevailed. Johnson & Johnson said in a statement, "We consistently argued that there was no jurisdiction, and we expect the existing verdicts that we are appealing to be reversed." Johnson & Johnson currently faces 5,500 claims in U.S. courts.
In 2115 New England, there are no borders, no states, and no regulations, yet never has a more peaceful and prosperous place existed. But Mr. Drake Security Company has seen better days. Faced with the prospect of waning power, Mr. Drake intends to replace the anarchy of New England with a government. But at what cost? And can anyone stop him? Anarchy in New England by Joe Jarvis is available from Amazon.com and all major bookstores.
Reuters reports the California Department of Insurance said on Thursday its preliminary estimates for insured wildfire losses at $1.05 billion based on claims received by the state's eight largest insurers, adding they expect the number to rise. California Insurance Commissioner Dave Jones, during a media call, said that insurers have received 601 claims for commercial property losses, 4,177 claims for partial residential losses, and 3,000 claims for auto losses. Since he erupting on October 8th and 9th, the blazes in parts of Northern California have blackened more than 245,000 acres and destroyed an estimated 6,900 structures as of Thursday, including homes, wineries, and other commercial buildings. CAL FIRE said more than 15,000 people remain displaced. Moody's estimates insured losses at $4.6 billion. This has been FPP Radio News, online at fppradio.com.
In a dramatic scene last night, a coalition of the nation's damaged women staged a drunken, tear-soaked march on the Capitol just after 2 a.m. Jane Carmichael has more.
Thank you, Brooke. The damaged women began their protest yesterday afternoon, marching on the National Mall at about 4 p.m., and then marching away furious, saying they were done with Congress once and for all. But then they came back again late last night, insisting that someone in Washington listen to them for once. The late-night protests started with tearful apologies, but quickly moved to anger as marchers demanded that Congress pass a bill making it illegal to say you love someone and then up and leave as soon as there's one little problem.
Why are you ignoring us? Stop ignoring us! Why don't you hear me when I talk to you? Wipe the smirk off of your face! No, come back! Come back because we think that you... We want you to care about us!
I don't need to pay a therapist to tell me I'm unhappy! I know I'm unhappy!
This is the Onion News Network.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Another underfeared individual. The second hour we get, we must be in Bowdoin. We get to talk to Matt Smith, and he's definitely one of those leave me aloneness kind of guys. And I want to make sure that we, I share something with him. I'm going to share it with you too. We're going to share it. There it is. I got you there, Matt. I want you to hear this, man.
I'm here.
All right, here we go. We had, we got Tom Vase in. He's just hanging out and listening and so on. And he's got an opinion about and everything other than Bitcoin's a scam coin. Scam. First, what's your opinion of alternative currencies? Any of them got your interest?
I do like Ethereum. I like Ethereum Classic. I like Monero, Zcash.
Okay, now this is what happened. We had Zencash. I think Tone, what is they're doing Zencash? Are they off of Zcash?
Yeah, Zencash apparently really likes Zcash, but it's not like they can't like go in and change what they want in Zcash, so they just forked Zcash, and now they're just doing whatever they want based on the foundation of Zcash.
Okay, now this is.
But Matt, I have a question for you. When you say you like them, are you actually invested in them, or you just like them as an idea? Okay, you're invested in those altcoins. Okay.
Yep.
All right.
But the vast majority of what I have though is in Bitcoin, of course.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. So everything's being priced. You look at all these altcoins. It's how much. It's not how much silver or gold or dollars. It's how much Bitcoin it's worth. I mean, you know. And I'm going Bitcoin. They're always denominated in some fiat, and I'm going. You know why?
You got to do it because it's communicating. You got to communicate the price in the terms that most people in the coming to the space are going to use as a reference point.
Ounces of silver.
It's actually way easier to get people excited about crypto than it ever was gold and silver.
Yeah, no, because of the features. You can't.
Yeah.
No, because of the returns.
No, I'm like, I can't use gold on the internet. And then Matt is a big internet guy.
But the question was, it's easier to get people excited. Yes, because you can like double your money in a month. You can't do that with metals.
What?
Well, there have been booms though. There have been substantial booms where not necessarily in the metals themselves, but in in mining stocks in particular, where you could see crypto like returns. It's there were periods of time like that.
Oh, you're right.
That was
a Doug thing. He was all about, I tell you what, let me tell you why you should do it and invest in this mine, because I went there.
Yep.
I looked at it. I felt it. I tested. I got my gold pan out, I mean, damn. So there are a lot of opportunities out there if you have the knowledge. All right. This is one feature that I want to share with you. And they kind of did it at the end of the interview. They talked and they kind of just offhand mentioned this feature. And I'm going, whoa. You need to lead off with this, man. What are you kidding me? Let me tell you what it is. What they did is in the crypto, to keep it private, they strip off a bunch of the identifiers, a lot of the metadata, so that, it's just crypto. It's saying they don't know anything, where it came from, where it goes. Cool. But they opened up a message field in there. Now, you can do this in Bitcoin also. If you know how to use it, you can include so many characters like a Twitter or something like that, and it's private. So I'm going, okay, wait a minute. Because we've been talking about this, like Signal and so on, and a lot of the guys, you guys, I would imagine you would like to be able to securely be able to send a message to someone over the internet, like an app, pirate messaging app. I mean, hell, I can get them to call that. Pirate messaging app to where it is totally secure. You're James Bond, MI, whatever the heck of you, not nobody knows. Well, I'm going, really? Well, if I take a crypto and I use a portion of a cent to send it with, I do a Satoshi or something, that I am able to send an encrypted transaction that includes a message that has all of the identifiers stripped off, I got to use this cheap crypto to be able to send a message that nobody can see where it came from, where it goes, what it says, nothing. Because Signal is end-to-end encrypted, but they know who you're encrypting it with. And I go, well, hell, that's most of what I don't want them to know anyway, you know? So now we got a currency that I can open up a field, and I can go ahead and send a message privately, and they don't know. Have any interest in that, do you, Matt?
I think that's very interesting. I mean, I think that's one of the awesome things about the crypto space is that Bitcoin I see as, like, legitimately as a currency. From my perspective, I see that as a currency. The other things are they're within them and within a lot of hype and nonsense. You know, there are some interesting applications that will emerge, but it's going to be like I talked about with Frontiers before. It's going to be messy getting there, and this is an application of it that makes great sense.
Yeah, no. If they can do that, I'm all over that. All right, Tone, I'll let you have a say, man. If they,
it's just to say on Signal, right? I mean, Signal works with what you have. Signal is the best encrypted messaging system we have. But Signal,
next.
What Signal did was, I mean, what are we using for messaging? Like 99% of the world uses their cell phone numbers to message people. So Signal is working with what we have. And they encrypted,
next.
You know, messaging between cell phones, but people know your cell phone numbers. So obviously the world knows who you're communicating with because it's cell phones. My view on it is this, even if Zencash can give you this totally anonymous encrypted messaging, maybe I'm still very skeptical that they're capable of doing that technologically. I mean, they can sit here on the radio and tell Ernie that they're going to be in the moon in a year. It doesn't mean they're going to actually pull it off, or like Mars or whatever. But what Signal did was, yes, it's not perfect. It did the best job it could to encrypt your messaging. And you know what? The world is starting to use it. Like 99% of the world uses text messaging. No one is using Zcash. So it's irrelevant how private it is if only four people are using it.
They're if it's very the four people found. I want, it's, yeah, you're confused with someone who gives a crap.
Found. They're very,
you know?
It's a lot easier to figure out what you're saying privately with four people than 100 people, even though you know you're talking to them, they have no idea what you're actually talking about.
Yeah, you know, I agree. I you know, this is one of the things I think that, Ernie, this is, you know, any area that's ever, any space that's ever between your ideas and my ideas, I think exist kind of in this subject matter, and I don't mean this topic necessarily, but I mean in this approach, like, what can, Signal does a great job with what they have, you know, I mean, they are substantial incremental improvement in what was available previously. And I think that, like, that's the way that the world, and that's the way the world operates. And while being away, it's not ideal, but because you can't move to ideal right away, or no one will move with you. You have to move people through to the ideal incrementally. And I think Signal goes a long way of doing that. Whether or not Zcash or some derivative of that might actually offer a better solution in the future, I don't know. I mean, it's really hard to actually make products successful in this world. And especially if you have too idealistic of approach, I think it's very, very hard to do it.
One more thing. And also, no one is stopping you from getting a burner cell phone. No one is stopping you from getting a cell phone outside this country that isn't registered to your name or anything, and then put Signal on it and then connect with your friends and tell them, hey, inside the message, hey, this is me. I'm texting you on Signal. Please, you know, don't save me in your phone book, but know this is me. Like, there are ways to use Signal totally anonymously.
I need a default privacy. I get to send a message and I can access it anywhere on the planet from any device that it's
right,
like
but,
downloading the crypto and
right,
I get
but
a message.
But you're assuming
next.
Zencash can do that and they're just like telling
man,
you
just
that
a freaking
could.
Idea that you can. This is just when they throw it, I'm going, whoa, you guys aren't focusing on that? Are you kidding me?
If it was easy, it would have been done already.
These
are complicated
problems. You're killing me. All right, Matt, you know, if this comes out that you can have private messaging using a crypto, that'd be like of interest to somebody, you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
Me too, because I've been looking for, does it have to be, they're going, look, it's going to have to be device-to-device. It's going to have to be a Raspberry Pi to Raspberry Pi, so there's not enough room to put in the operating system, have room to even screw you, and you kind of, blah, blah, blah. We're going through all of this, and then all of a sudden, they go, yeah, we can do it. From the first letter of Captain Mark. History is full of flowery documents claiming to limit the power of the crown. But these poetic social contracts have been impotent to prevent the predation. Limited government is a lie they use to keep us submissive. The Crown cannot be trusted to abide by its founding charters, nor its treaties, nor even its own rules. The essence of the Crown is centralized violence, and I've had enough. That's why I raised my black banner. I am no revolutionary. My aim is not to reset the cycle of violence, but to break it. My aim is an evolved society, invisible to the Crown. Not a new hierarchy, but decentralized networks with no central figure for the Crown to target. If you want your servile life, keep it. But we will not submit to the Crown's agenda. And when you are ready to stop being its beast of burden, ready for adventure and opportunity, join us at PiratesWithoutBorders.com. Okay, Matt, Tone wanted to talk to you real quick. Go ahead.
Hey, Matt, cool. since we're on break.
Yeah, but it's recorded, FYI.
Yeah, it's really, that's fine. Yeah, no, I was just curious because, like, I have been, I mean, Monero, I'm not really too critical of Monero. I don't think Monero's a scam. I just don't think they're going to be successful, because if Monero has anything useful in it, it will eventually get adopted into Bitcoin. So Monero gets a pass from me. Like, Monero and Litecoin, they get a pass because they're not, like, scammy. They're trying to do some science, and Litecoin is just more of a testnet. Now, Ethereum and Zcash are very different. Now, Zcash, basically, here's how Zcash started. Zuko shows up at core development and says, you guys need to add the following into Bitcoin. And a bunch of smart people look at his work and they say, this is dumb. And he says, I will prove you wrong. I will start my own altcoin. And with that altcoin, he's like basically taking 20% of the mining reward for himself to get paid to doing the job and promotion. And I don't like that. Like, to me, that's a little scammy.
Yeah, I don't like that either.
Ethereum,
I didn't know that.
Right. Like basically like 20% of the mining reward goes to the Zcash Foundation. Okay. And that's how they have the money to continue doing development. It's not a grassroots movement. It's basically a bunch of guys that are getting paid from the mining reward. And as long as people are, you know, pumping and dumping that stuff, they're doing good. Ethereum is a different animal. Now, I've been critical about Ethereum since before their pre-sale. I don't know how much time we have in this commercial break, but...
You got a minute and a half.
Got a minute and a half. Perfect. I can do this in a minute. I have four major problems with Ethereum. I have a podcast called Crypto Scam. I only covered part one. I'll cover the rest very, very soon. My four problems with Ethereum are, first of all, I've been critical of it from the pre-sale because I thought that they were breaking all the security laws and SEC laws. So to me, Ethereum is a security, and I still think Vitalik might get arrested. Now, him being friendly with Putin might actually save his ass from going to an American prison. So he's at least doing something smart. So huge regulatory problems. My second problem is conceptual. I don't believe the world needs decentralized smart contracts because no one is censoring smart contracts. They're censoring file sharing, they're censoring money, but no one is censoring smart contracts. Decentralizing them is technically inefficient. My other problem with them is technological. Their blockchain is growing at 5 gigabytes a day. No one can download the whole thing. They're trying to go to proof of stake. And how the hell are you going to get the miners to stop mining? And my final problem with them is an application token. There is a reason why eBay doesn't charge you eBay stock to buy on eBay. Amazon doesn't charge you Amazon stock to buy on Amazon. They're forcing you to use Ethereum to have a smart contract. And that's silly. If the world needs smart contracts, they're going to offer you them in common currencies that you know, not force you to use an application token. Like, application tokens are like the craziest thing.
All right. We're coming back. Here we go.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Oh, baby. All right. During the break, Cone got that. Yeah, I don't like this, and I don't like that, and it's because of this, and they did it wrong. But my thing is, I'm going, damn, if they could do one thing, if they could take a blockchain and be able to use in a nano token, I'll join their crap. You know, I'll buy $100 worth of whatever, give me private messaging for the rest of my life. I'm in, man. And then, of course, the token will freaking shoot up if it has some really good application like that. So when you're dealing in other cryptos or you see something of interest, is there a criteria for you, Matt?
Well, I mean, I think that a lot of the things that exist in the crypto world today are, they don't deserve to exist. But honestly, in that really creative and very destructive environment, which has been which has made windfall profits for a lot of people in the short term. That's where the interesting things really happen, and I think you can't apply any sort of normal fundamentals to any of it. I think you can look if you have a really strong technical background. I think you can look at the underlying tech, but whether or not you can apply the business opportunity that the technologists are attempting to build, whether or not that's actually something that has any plausibility, that's a whole other skill to be able to evaluate that. And I think you can look at the actors, and you can make judgments about the integrity of the actors, the people that are leading the effort. I mean, one of the things that VCs and angel investors look at when they're investing in companies more often than anything else is the team, the founders themselves. And you can learn a lot by watching what they do and how they conduct themselves. Are they in it for themselves? Are they in it because they just can't walk away from something they feel like they got to do? And yep. I think when you find people like that, then those are the founders who make things happen in ways that wouldn't otherwise. Like, they create totally new things that didn't exist beforehand because they want to see it done so badly. And of course, they hope to get enriched in the process. But if they don't, that's not the main thing.
You know, this is one thing that I look at in the crypto world is it was, and that's how they appealed to the Liberty community. They went to, the Levolution. They said, oh, look at this great money. Well, right when we were really starting to push silver, we created the silver calculator and be able to use silver at a festival with whatever kind of silver that you had. And blip, 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 blip. It's like a POS system, man. Done. We know how much silver based on the current price of. Cool. Right at the same time that Bitcoin started going. So I'm going, yeah, so we kind of combine the two, and we're going, yeah, as long as I got these features, and it's got to be as anonymous as silver, but you can't use silver on the internet. So I'm going, now they're trying to. We got Peter Schiff was advocating for gold money. We get a gold money account, and every month it puts a little bit, what the man knows. And Peter up in Aspen, he goes, yeah, but it's your property. They can't take it. I go, man, I got a whole list of they took it, okay? So that ain't a feature.
Yeah, if it's in a foreign jurisdiction, though, it's a lot harder for them to do it. And that's the way that a lot of people handle stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but it's I need pirate money. I want pirate money. Damn it. I set a standard. So this is – so I am still waiting because, Bitcoin was an altcoin. I mean, when it came out, I heard all the same stuff. Well, now it's $5,500 or something, and they're going, damn, is that a bubble? I'm sorry, what did you say, Tom?
Just broke 6,000 a minute
ago. Of course it did. Of course it did. Did you know it broke 6,000, Matt? Are you grinning?
I didn't know. I hadn't checked this morning, but that's of course always nice to see.
Nice to see. Okay, right. Now let's get into, we'll start introducing it, what you're doing now. He's got, the idea is royaltyexchange.com. Royaltyexchange.com. Is there some way other people participate in that? Is that you're doing an IPO or something? Or is there somebody? Well, what are you doing with that? Well, first, you explain what it is, but then you can tell us about it.
Yeah. So, and I know this is I should say that, the whole idea of copyrights is a somewhat contentious issue within the liberty minded community. And I think that, the creative works of artists are property. And I think that they should be able to set terms to be compensated for that property. I think it's different than patents and things like that are really abused. But anyway, what we are trying to do in general is we're trying to make these interesting assets investable. And what that means basically is making it so that it's easy enough to find them, to compare them, and to acquire them and sell them, right, for investors. And what that does is it actually increases the value of that underlying intellectual property for the owners, for the artists. So Royalty Exchange is the first step in that, and what that approach is essentially it's auctions on often songwriter royalties associated with, a lot of popular artists, it depends on what kind of music you like, but we've had, everything from Barry White to Kanye West. Songwriters who earn, every time those songs are played, they earn a royalty. And then you're basically buying a portion of their royalty income. And it gives, because today investors can't get income anywhere. I mean, there's not many things that they can invest in. Even if, Bitcoin just, hit an all-time high, that's fantastic, but it doesn't generate income. And most people, most investors, most of the capital in the world is actually seeking income. It needs to be, pensions need to be able to meet their monthly obligations. And they can only do that if there's income coming in every month. It's not about counting on the price of something to go up. So,
let's talk about what you're talking about. There are property, intellectual property, copyrights, as someone, name an artist that you guys represent. Just pick one.
Well, we, like I said, we've sold songwriter royalties on Kanye West's work, on Barry White's work, and about everybody in between.
Okay, so you got these artists that have a financial, I guess, flow, you know, from people using their songs in commercials, elevators, at the whatever, and kind
playing on the radio, download, streamed on Spotify.
So this, they get a cut, a little bit of what. So now you look at a song, whatever it is, pick one, and you have this song, and it generates a known amount of revenue for the previous year, what it's doing this year. So that gives it some kind of a value as an investment. So give me a song, give me an example of how that works and what your role in it is.
Okay, so a songwriter who earns credit on a Barry White song, My First, My Last, My Only, I think is the one that we sold. And that one, has a 25-year-plus track record of earning income that songwriter, has earned from that. And it lasts for the life of that songwriter plus 70 years. That's the way the copyright law works. So that has, an investor can look at that and can assign a value to it, assuming the, income trend continues, right? They will make certain assumptions about whether it will grow, whether it will shrink based upon its past performance, but it has a real value to them, that earnings income. So on our platform right now, investors, we have 22,000 investors on our platform, they bid to own these assets from the artists, which creates a, these artists get liquidity, they can generate cash they just could not do ever before, and the investors get access to income that was just unavailable to them. But the goal is to make these assets investable. And the first step with that is these auctions that we've been doing for the last, couple of years now almost at Royalty Exchange. We've done over 200 of them. The next step is that we have a subsidiary company called Royalty Flow, which is basically acquiring larger assets. The first one is Eminem's catalog, everything between it's actually not Eminem's what he owned, but it's what his producers owned, the people who found him. And so they have all of Eminem's work from 1999 to 2013, and we're taking it public as part of an IPO.
Ooh. We'll talk about some details on this more when we come back. RoyaltyExchange.com, the next big thing Matt Smith going to make some money at. You want to make it with him? I don't know. Go check it out.
Imagine, if you will, a virtual world, a symbiotic economy with its own.
Okay, when we come back, we'll go ahead and get into the details of, you got an investor tab up there. I go, boom, and I want to do it. Well, we'll talk about the returns, why the returns. Has anybody else done this before? How's it going? You're doing it, and we'll talk some more details about it, okay?
Okay,
I got a question or two. All right, yeah. Tone wants to grill you again. All right, here we go.
For years.
All right, go, Tone.
No. I was just curious. Is it like when the investors bid, do they bid on X amount of time going forward for them to get a return? And also, are they bidding per song, per album, or for all of their work, let's say for the next year or something like that? Like, what are the parameters?
Or just Royalty Exchange in general. I mean, I don't know.
Right. Like, what are the parameters, right? And is it one bidder take all? Like is one guy going to get the royalties from an entire Eminem album for the next 3 years? Like, what are the, like, is it like open? Like, you can set your own parameters on what you're bidding on?
We should have him answer this on the live show.
No, I know, but these are the questions. Like, or do you standardize what the pockets are? Like, it's one song for 3 years, one album for a year, all of his work for the next 6 months.
Or you can put a genre. It's all rap songs or something. I mean,
What are your, standardizations for these contracts?
Do you want me to answer that now, or do you want me to wait?
No.
Not on air. I'm just curious.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. So we'll get to it when we come back, right?
Yep.
Cool.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Stop me, cause I'm having a good time, having a good time. Shooting star leaping through the sky like a tiger, defying the laws of gravity. I'm a racing car passing by.
Like Lady Godiva, I'm gonna go. There's no stopping me. But I'll probably keep my clothes on. You know, I'm just like Lady Godiva. That'd be bad. That'd be bad. Except maybe Matt Smith, E. Purdy. You know, that would get him on. We get him on a horse. All right. This is one. Ooh, that's another thing. You go down to Argentina and so on. You're riding horses and putting on a hat and stuff.
The whole gaucho lifestyle. Yeah, sure. Did a little bit of that when I was living there, for sure.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. This is what I want to do. We're going to get into more details of this, but just some of the headlines on top of Freeman's Phoenix right now, man. It's like you need to listen to Matt. All right, here we go. Department of Homeland Security Secretary just warned of a severe threat of new 9/11-style attack by ISIS and al-Qaeda. America be afeared. Okay. All right, we got that to worry about. China to compel Saudi Arabia to trade oil in yuan, ending the petrodollar as world reserve currency. Well, this is, you know, you got anything in the dollar, man, you'll be afeared. So you got to look for some investment, something this might be one. 6 years ago today, Gaddafi was killed for wanting to create a gold-backed currency. Yeah, you know, man, if you don't want to go with the man, they get Satoshi was Nakamoto was a real guy, or maybe he is something. He'd be dead by now. Okay, I mean, you know, this said he goes, nope, you don't know who I is because I know how y'all work. Wall Street analyst Gary Schilling, he's like, I don't understand Bitcoin. What's up with that? You know, all right. Bitcoin price nears $10,000 in Zimbabwe due to a lack of cash in the country. They're freaking, man, they're, you know, bidding up. This is kind of the story. It's going to be Zimbabwe. Then it's going to be, you know, whatever land here or this land or that states or this country. That, you know, this is just going to keep going. Well, you know, where do you put your money? Well, if you got a regular stream of revenue, well, that makes it easy for you to leverage it into whatever. Well, if you go IPO and it goes, all of a sudden these songs are going to be worth $1 billion. And the revenue may not support it because people are always speculating into the future or something, but at least you got revenue stream, and you go on to the site and learn all about royaltyexchange.com. So let's say I go up there and I want to make me some money. And I'm, you know, and Matt's been good at making money, so I go, you know, the moneymaker guy. And I go on to this page, and where do I go? I go to investors, sign up, sign in. What's the first thing? Where do I go learn about it?
I think it's a good idea. There's definitely a lot of resources on the site that talk about music royalties in particular, which is what we primarily focus on. Although we have sold some book royalties and some photograph royalties and some screen royalties.
Ah, too. See, that's my next difference. Question is that, you know, you got copyright. Man, there's a bunch of copyright stuff.
Yeah, and I'm really interested in the creative work. I think that's really, I think that there's always the headline artists that you hear about, like Eminem. But there's actually around Eminem, you know, there are dozens of people that make it so that, you know, helped Eminem get to where he was, help create the music, are instrumental in the process, and also have a stake in the income. And those are primarily the folks that we work with, the hundreds of thousands of other rights holders.
Now, you don't want to talk to the artist. They don't own their songs. They got screwed a long time ago.
No, well, actually, I wouldn't say that, but I would say that certainly some of them had. There's music industry is notorious for bad deals for artists in some cases, for sure. But I do think that the label being the ones who's really doing it, and the labels are also not the people that we're really working with either. Instead, it's the songwriters or the producers. Who are really, you know, behind the scenes doing the work.
So Tone had a bunch of questions off air about how I would, are you investing in individual songs? Do you have a whole album? Are you doing for periods of time? How is the investment structured that you're, what are you buying?
Okay, so let's talk about Royalty Exchange in particular. This doesn't have anything to do with the M&M offering we have, but this is Royalty Exchange in particular. What we do is we work with the individual rights holder to try and meet their goals. So like if they're basically trying to, the Barry White songwriter, he was actually trying to make sure he had guaranteed income for the rest of his life. So he sold a portion of his royalties, which generated income, but it's, you know, the music industry has been in turmoil for the last 15 years in particular. And that's turning around in a big way, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. But one of the things that what he wanted to do is he actually wanted to sell a piece of it to buy an annuity, which would guarantee him a certain amount of money, you know, every quarter for the rest of his life, however long he lived. So it's just a hedging. It's just a hedging thing. So with what he did, it was just one song. We sold 25% of one song of his on the platform, and it was his specifically, it's called the public performance royalties associated with it, and investors bid on those royalties, and it is a winner-take-all. You know, unfortunately, there are regulators in the U.S. who don't allow the securitization, which is like the dividing up of assets and sale of shares of those assets, unless you go through a certain process and only make it available to specific people. So the auctions are a winner-take-all. one, you know, there's lots of bidders, but the one who bids the most gets the asset.
Okay, and then they just get the percentage of whatever the stream goes into some account of escrow if it's mine.
It gets cut depending upon what agency is paying it, or you know, if it's a label or if it's one of these called these PROs, these performance rights organizations. They pay out either quarterly or twice a year, depending upon the
I'm sure there's some metric you can look at whether this is sustainable or not. It'd be something like, all right, 10 years, this particular song will generate, I don't know what, let's say $50,000. Over 10 years, it get $50,000. But because it's, you know, it's on the market and pieced out and kind of this and that, and maybe in the future, and somebody wants to put their money somewhere, it's better than treasuries or whatever the hell, it could be for a $50,000 payout, they could, bid $100,000 for it. I mean, is that what's going on, or is it always under, you know, I mean, how rational is this?
Well, I've seen things that are rational. I've seen things that are irrational. Unfortunately, that's the way the markets are, right? So
yeah.
With this too. So sometimes there are things that people that have more cachet and people bid more on because of the cachet, and they'll get a lower return on it, but it will still get a return. And I think that's one of the, you know, that's the key thing. And but they all do have to look at the past performance, and that doesn't mean that's going to behave the same way in the future. So they just have to extrapolate that. Now, one of the things that is bullish for the music industry right now, though, because of streaming, it's changed the business model entirely. And the business shrank for 15 years. Investors would call it a really severe bear market for 15 years. Turned around for the first time just a little bit in 2015. In 2016, it really started to take off, growing in double digits. And, you know, some specific assets grow at a lot faster rate than that. So let me talk a little bit about the IPO that we're doing. So the IPO is essentially we're taking the anchor asset in it is a catalog of Eminem's royalties, and it's on Eminem's work. It's from the producers. It's a portion of theirs. But every time it's streamed on Spotify, and Eminem hasn't released an album since 2013, is still the 12th most streamed artist in the world. So, you know, that's the income is quite strong from his, and it's growing. The income grew from that. The royalties grew 43% between 2015 and 2016.
Damn.
And it's earned more. It's earned $2 million in streaming. And this is just the portion that's being sold, you know. It's earned $2 million in streaming royalties this year, in the first 6 months of this year. It earned $2.3 million in all of last year. And that just shows you the trend for streaming is so big. I mean, you know, Goldman, which, you know, Goldman Sachs or whatever, you think what you want of them, but their prediction is that it goes from $3.9 billion in 2016 to $34 billion streaming alone by 2030. So great assets will flourish in that environment. And so what this public offering does is it gives people an opportunity to participate in that growth. And, you know, so any individual investor can participate, and you know, the shares will be traded on a public exchange post-offering, so most likely NASDAQ, because we're in the application process with them. Just depends upon the size of the offering, whether or not it gets there. But if not, it would be on another OTC exchange. But lawyers don't allow me to say what I really think, but whatever. Anyway, and the business model for that is actually, it's an old business model we're applying to music royalties, well, to media royalties generally, and that's one from the gold miners, actually. There's companies like Royal Gold and Silver Wheaton, people who know these guys. They finance in a very unique way, and Royal Gold, our neighbor here in Denver, it's a $5.8 billion market cap company. It has 23 employees. It earned 10 times more per employee last year than Apple did.
Damn. And then, we need one more segment we got with Matt Smith. You want to explain it to us. It's another way to compensate creators. We'll see what happens.
From the second letter of Captain Mark. Any pirate knows that commerce is communication. Markets condense oceans of information into a single price. Innovations in communication are circumventing the scrutiny of the crown. This signals a change in the coin of the realm. The crown uses digital currency to surveil, censor, seize, and destroy wealth at will, so pirate currency must protect us from this weaponized money. We need to move funds further, faster, cheaper, and without third-party observation, basing decisions on an accelerating flow of information. so pirates require nearly instantaneous transactions with no arbitrary limits on volume or artificial influences on fees. Most importantly, a pirate currency must preclude centralization. Otherwise, it will become another link in our chain to the crown. A superior currency will result in the obsolescence of the coin of the realm and the extinction of the crown itself. Trade above the grid. Join us at PiratesWithoutBorders.com. Yeah, the existence of the crown itself. I'm all about that, man. All right. Now, when we come back, you know, we got one more segment live here, and I just want to, what do you want to focus on? You want to continue on royalty exchange?
Yeah, whatever you want. Future? Whatever
well,
you want, Ernie.
Well, you know, I you know, it's a unique opportunity. The thing that I really want to address in it is, you know, I'm old enough to remember the way it used to be, and, you know, did it get played, and somebody hears their song on the radio, it was in some movie or trailer of something, whatever, where's my cut, and you got, and ouch, quit it, and back and forth. But this is a whole nother way of doing it. It's monetizing future revenue, and I'm kind of surprised that this hadn't been done before, but when you get in to the music industry, you're not opening any more Tower Records, you know, but it's online, it's streaming, and where do you go for that? Well, you got iTunes, you know, 99¢, however much it costs now to do whatever, and then there are others. Well, some of these, just like streaming, a good friend of mine, he's a big movie buff. God forbid I stream on my Kodi, you know, some movie that, you know, hadn't been released on DVD. I can't believe in your guy. I go, yeah, screw him, man. It's on somebody's server in Timbuktu. Who gives a crap? And I get to watch him, whatever. Well, it's pressure on this, but the inconvenience of it and it being a pain in the ass or it doesn't stream well and you're not, and if you download it, streaming's one thing, but if you download it, then you got some more issues with the man. So, if you make it easy, if it's cheap, if it's convenient, people will pay for that, you know, but I'm not going to pay for something. They're screwing me on the price, in my opinion, anyway, and it doesn't go to the artist. Oh, how are you going to compensate? Hey, you guys already screwed the artist, so screw you. But, you know, you have, YouTube stars or individuals in their own labels, or they're going out, you know, all this stuff, if it gets plugged into a convenient system like yours, they claim copyright just by having that on there, just by creating it, just by, you know, putting a stamp on it or something. Does that, you know, put it into something you can use? I mean, what's the criteria by which you would take an artist and be able to list it? What's the, you know, what form you got to fill out?
Got it.
We'll do that when we come back. All right, here we go.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Yeah, let's take a looky-see. You know, from a perspective of around the world, you know, Matt Smith has got, you know, and that is another opportunity to make some money on something that's doing a revenue stream if I can work with that. I got regular revenue stream. How'd you come across this, Matt? You know, this idea, I mean, I know the music industry is going, yay, Matt Smith saved it. Saved us. So there's a mechanism by which we can and get on. We love us some Matt Smith and Royalty Exchange, and I want to be on it and do it, and I'm a YouTube kind of, I created my own, and how can I, and tell me all about it from the artist's perspective.
Well, I think the thing that saved the music industry is Spotify, and it's really made a huge difference, and Apple Music coming along, all the streaming services have changed everything because they offer something that's fantastically more convenient for the customer. So by creating something that's really great for the customer, it's enriched the music industry. And by the way, almost all of the revenue that comes in to Spotify gets distributed to rights holders, which includes the artists, of course, the label, you know, songwriters, publishers, producers, all of this huge ecosystem of rights holders. So I think that, you know, what the people that we serve, again, is this ecosystem that are usually not this, you know, the headline artists, the people who have tons of options, people that are throwing money at them, the people that could, you know, do endorsement deals or just choose to go on a tour or add a show to a tour or whatever to raise money. Instead, it's the people who are part of the creative process but really exist kind of behind the scenes more. And we certainly have been a welcome site for them, no doubt.
Yeah, no, I can see. Well, you know, what's the mechanism by which they would approach you? I mean, you know, you think of a whole bunch of, you know, artists that have talent and skills, and they got, and hell, that's where Justin Bieber came from. You know, he's kid and mom taking him around all these stations, and all of a sudden he blows up. Well, there's another Justin Bieber sitting right out there, and they want to talk to Matt. How do they do that?
Well, the biggest thing to remember is that what the investor market that we serve are people that are looking for income, not speculation. So whereas, like, labels, for instance, serve the purpose, like, they're almost like the venture capitalists, independent labels, the venture capitalists of the music business, where they fund lots of different artists, and some of them really work and some of them don't, you know? Mm-hmm. But what we do is we work with people who basically have a history of income already, and we carve out a portion of that they're willing to sell for a certain amount of upfront money, and then we create a competitive market around it where they get the best possible outcome, best possible pricing outcome on that. So if you have a track record of income from your intellectual property, then, you know, we can definitely work with you. And we work with people, you know, like I said, mostly people in the music space. We're really interested in getting involved in the other spaces, but music is... We get tons of great press because of music. It's sexy. And
yeah, well, help me. You know, if there is someone, they copyright it, it goes, I mean, where's the revenue stream? Who are they listing their songs with? Is it, you know, how many advertising dollars they get from YouTube for people clicking on their, you know, I'm a cat video? I mean, you know, this is, I'm wondering, you know, before they come to the attention of you, they have to actually have produced a revenue stream. Well,
right.
How do they do that? I mean, what is what's the criteria for that revenue stream? Is it in with the, you know, Writers Guild of the whatever the hell? I mean, you know, Where are you looking?
Well, so the number one place, there are a couple of, there are pseudo-government agencies that they're called PROs, Performance Rights Organizations. Two of them, anyway, are pseudo-government agencies, BMI and ASCAP. In addition to that, there are some private players in there. GMR is one, and CSAC's another. And in any case, these guys basically collect any performance royalties on behalf of the artists that register with them and distribute them to them regularly, usually on a quarterly basis. So, and there's a long track record. And by working with those companies, it allows there to be clear title transfer, essentially, of, you know, from this income used to be going to this person, and now it's getting reassigned to another party.
Okay, so they're listed somewhere and producing something with the club of the business of somebody. So you're having to interface. There's some paperwork involved.
We do all of that on their behalf. You know, we walk through it all with the artist. But yeah, it's certainly not the simplest thing in the world. That's for sure.
So you've been working on this how long?
It's been like 21 months now.
And you've been setting it up, getting it all structured and ready, and kind of and IPO.
Well, the IPO is we're not IPOing Royalty Exchange. What we're doing is we're doing an IPO of a royalty finance company, and the anchor asset of that royalty finance company is FBT's M&M catalog, which covers royalties on everything, all the sound recordings, technically.
Wait. So you're doing an IPO just on this one, you know, block of whatever M&M?
Yeah, that is the core asset in there, and then we'll add other catalogs to it.
Oh.
So as I started to tell you, we aim to be the royal gold of media financing. And so within media, royal gold basically finds great properties that have good operators that are sitting on proven reserves of gold, and they finance the mine, essentially, and they get a royalty on every ounce of the metal that's created there, that's produced there. And that's why their margins are so good, the return of capital for shareholders is so good. But that's not been done in the media business, and specifically in music. And with the fundamentals of it booming right now, you have that additional driver that's going to help support it. But we can go out and acquire some of these, you know, passive streams in music, and we're going to accumulate them in royalty flow, and shareholders will be able to participate.
Okay, now this is one thing. One, you're supporting the concept of intellectual property for copyright, so I guarantee that, you know, the boys in the industry are probably, you know, thank you. You know, I mean, God, and finally we get some legitimacy on us doing whatever. But you go out and you have revenue that is, you know, it's like income property of, you know, fill in the blank, and you got a revenue stream, all of a sudden you can leverage that into Lord knows what. So with the increase in the industry, royalties are actually getting paid because they made it convenient for something like Spotify or iTunes or whatever the heck. Then you go with Pandora or something. You go in there and you say, damn, you know, this is convenient. An artist puts their stuff out. You know, this is, what's her name? Swift, Taylor Swift. Mm-hmm. She was all Spotify'd up, and then she was complaining they didn't do it right or they're doing more. There's competition. There'll be another one. So you're not, you know, limited to any one service that provides this. They're just generating that revenue and making it convenient for the customer to generate that revenue for that particular property, and that's what you're using to do. And I bet all of these streaming services are inviting you to their Christmas party, I would imagine.
I hope so. Well, you know, whoever wins the streaming wars, if it ends up being Spotify or Pandora,
you don't care.
Apple Music, it doesn't make any difference, and it's good for the artists, and it's good for the customers, it's good for the music lovers. So it's a great time to be interested and involved in the music space.
You know, that's one thing, you know, the criticism on streaming devices, you know, that you have a Q2, Bach, Google, whatever the heck it is, and it's just an Android system. You're just loading up an app, and one of those apps is called Kodi. And then Kodi, you can, you know, put up a bunch of other stuff that Kodi doesn't even know. They don't care. They go, yeah, peace out. So I go up there, and I can go on different, you know, services and watch different movies, listen to videos, the songs, and do whatever I want, do my own file stuff, whatever. That thing does more than I know anyway. I don't use it that much, but because I got a Roku in the bedroom, and it's, you know, Netflix and Amazon, and all my searches on Amazon is right next to the next drone strike of the CIA on Amazon Cloud. You know, I'm going, yay, I feel better about that. But, you know, this is an opportunity, like you're saying, it's growing a lot. So that created a business opportunity for you. How the hell did you come across this concept? Where did that come from?
Well, I was just looking for ways. You know, working with investors at Stansberry Research was eye-opening me, understanding what their needs really were, because I also looked at investments primarily as I want to buy it at X price, and, you know, it goes up in price, and then I sell it, and that's where I get my profit. You know, being a relatively young person, that's the way that we look at it. But understanding that the biggest needs within investors is definitely related to income changed my perspective on it, and understanding that there's no place you can get income today. I mean, what do you get if you have a bank account? What do you get from your savings account? You get nothing. Nothing. You know, and I mean, obviously, treasuries are terrible. There's no way to get any kind of yield. And this was a way, a unique way, that's, as far as I'm concerned, underpriced for investors to get yield.
You know, I'm going to definitely use this as an example. We have a big copyright thing coming up. We're trying to get Stephen Kinsella back on the show to debate, you know, the author that gave a presentation Wednesday on this that Tony and I went to. And copyright. Was it? Well, I tell you what, it wouldn't be an issue if the, you know, artist had an opportunity, or whoever owns it, to get, you know, some money out of this, and people can invest. It legitimizes it in the minds of, it's easy. You know, okay, it'll work. But then, you know, enforcement of the copyright's a whole nother thing. I'm getting called, you can't use that image on, you got off a Google image that you put on into the story, and I just hang up the phone. Whatever, come get me. Let's have this debate, you know. But, you know, if you make it easy and simple, and it's just kind of, and I click on, and somebody, I'm hip to that, you know, making it easy. Matt Smith from Music Industry.
The message of liberty.
There we go. All right, you got to say what you wanted, and we filled up 2 hours pretty quick, did we not?
We did. Well, we did. Thanks, Ernie. That was fun. It's always, always fun talking to you. Just never done it in this way. So this is cool.
We haven't done a show before?
No, we never have.
See? That's how it goes. It's fun. You know, fun. We got a lot of information. Cool. Well, make yourself available in the future on different stuff, or you got something to talk about, or certainly when you get ready to do your IPO, you want to come on. Plus, this show is Donna. After I get done editing, it'll be a few hours. I get through all the stuff. Donna will send you the link to it, and it'll have a video file, and we had some scrolling graphics up there and so on for Royalty Exchange and you. And then you'll have the MP3 file, and people, they get to know Matt and the history of, and good guy, endorsed by, and you got this product. We got to explain it, and they get, and it's all good.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's fun, Ernie. Thank you very much.
Boom. Done. Thank you, Matt. It's a pleasure talking to you, buddy.
All right. Take care.
Bye.